Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Programming note, confirmed. Week one appearance of Texans executive vice president and general manager Nick Caserio on Payne and Pendergast will be 2 days from now. Wednesday, 7:30, I'm assuming 7:30 a.m. That's when he typically joins us. Wednesday, 7:30 a.m., we'll get a chance to start to look ahead to the season with Nick Caserio, Seth. That'll be fun.
And I'm going to try to calm myself down between now and then. There's an article in The Athletic that shows extreme disrespect to C.J. Stroud, D'Amico Ryans, Will Anderson, and more. We'll get to that in the next segment.
Yes.
But it's some bulletin board material for old Sethers here.
I love it.
I'm going to put some of these poll results from these anonymous executives and coaches, how they disrespect our quarterback.
Yeah.
And I'm going to use it to fuel me all week long.
Good. Yep, we'll get to that in the next segment. That'll be fun. All right, the college football weekend is over. The two biggest losers from the college football weekend, and neither of them are teams necessarily, because I don't think in this new world we live in with a 12-team playoff, I mean, you can look at, UT, you know, first time ever, they were number one in the AP poll preseason. That lasted 1 week. They lost to Ohio State. Clemson loses at home to LSU, who hasn't won a season opener since 2019. LSU hasn't won a season opener since before the pandemic, and they beat Clemson at home. And then Notre Dame, in the third of the matchups of top 10 teams over the weekend last night, lose to Miami 27-24. Of course, I'm a Notre Dame fan. I came away actually encouraged by that game. I thought their young quarterback, C.J. Carr, played pretty well. I think Miami's going to be a really good team this year. And they fell behind 21-7, and they fought back and tied the game at 24, and Miami just made some plays down the stretch, so they win that game. So the lower-ranked team in all three of those games win this weekend. So the poll will be interesting to see this week when it comes out, see what effect it had.
I feel of all of the energy boosts you get from week one upsets or what have you, I feel like Florida State is probably the one you should read into the least.
Should read into the energy boost. Do you think Florida State is?
I don't think Florida State's going to end up being a top 10 team. That was more about
Alabama
than it was about Florida State.
But some people get an energy boost off of Alabama losing.
You should get that boost. Right? No, Alabama might indeed. You should read into the Alabama loss.
Yes.
I just wouldn't read too much into the Florida State victory. I think it's just an indication that, man, Alabama has just rapidly veered so far off course since Nick Saban left. And last year there were questions about the discipline of the team and whether, boy, this it's one thing to not be as good a coach as Nick Saban, but it looks like they don't have any of the discipline or any of the other factors that came along with it. That in year two of that type of environment, things can get really ugly.
And that's loser number one. There's two big losers from this weekend. I know I said it wasn't a team. I don't think it's a team. I think it's Kalen DeBoer, the head coach. I think he's cooked. I think he's done. I think your point, Seth, about going if you're experiencing these things, which are all discipline issues, there was footage also that I saw floating around social media, and I watched a lot of that game on Saturday. But the ones where you can hone in on some of the Alabama players off camera and they get you the wide shot and you can see the complete lack of effort of chasing guys down and stuff like that, programs like this with head coaches that are new, and he's 14 games into his career, those are hard things to correct.
And especially in this day and era of the transfer portal and NIL and everything else, it's not like all of a sudden 1.5 years into your tenure, you tell all of these guys who are basically free agents anytime they want to be, hey, listen up, fellas. Yeah. Things are going to be different around here this time around. Yeah.
Right.
Mid-course. That's hard to pull off.
Doesn't work.
They've already labeled you a punk. Basically, if they're disrespecting you and not showing up to practice on time, all of those other things, and that now all of a sudden you try to draw a hard line, that's tough to do as a teacher in high school.
Yes.
Much less as a coach of a huge program like that.
Fourth loss to an unranked team in 14 games as the Alabama head coach, Kalen DeBoer. Nick Saban had four in his entire 17 seasons at Alabama. Three of those were in his first year in 2007, where he was trying to kind of right the ship, which he ended up doing, obviously. Won multiple national championships. So, yeah, I think Kalen DeBoer is cooked there in Alabama. I think he's operating, and he's in the SEC. Like, it's not – like, some of these games, it's not going to get any easier for you, all of those things. That's number one. Number two is tied to Arch Manning. It's not Arch Manning himself. although I think Arch Manning has a lot of work to do. I think he looked kind of rattled in the game on Saturday. Look, Matt Patricia, who's now the DC at Ohio State, had called a great game against a very talented Texas team. I just thought, Seth, there were so many times in that game, I thought his mechanics were bad. He's throwing flat-footed. He's slinging the ball 98 miles an hour.
You know? I mean, I think there are a lot of things where I think people have tried to make excuses for it, yeah. And it's frustrating because a lot of those people are the same ones that were calling him a generational talent before he's actually proven anything in college football. Yeah. Now are telling you, hey, let's not jump to conclusions. Bro, you already jumped to conclusions. You're the captain of the ship of jumping conclusions. Yeah. You're on a damn trampoline. Don't tell me not to jump to conclusions. But I would say, going against that Ohio State defense, which is already a good defense, but now has a different defensive coordinator and is doing a lot of funky stuff that they wouldn't have seen on film. To me, at the very least, it just looked like Manning was frazzled. And that, okay, it would have been better if he wasn't frazzled, but at least it's understandable and it's his first start. Lots of good quarterbacks have had bad first starts in games in their college careers. So it's not a death blow to somehow Manning being a good quarterback, but I think it's a dose of reality.
Totally.
That, like, all right, let's pump the brakes a little bit on crowning him the next great quarterback before he's done an actual thing.
Which you and I have been saying the entire offseason. You and I have been saying the entire offseason, why are people putting him as the number one pick in these mock drafts? First of all, when you don't even know he's coming out this year, he comes from a family where guys tend to stay in school a little bit longer because they don't need to come out.
Because they need remedial classes, is what I heard.
Does he even deserve to be there based on 93 passes attempted in your college career? The answer is no, and that's where my second loser is not Arch Manning. It's any of you out there in our business, in the broadcasting business or writing or anything, if you're a host in our industry who did even one segment over the last several months where the topic involved NFL teams tanking for Arch Manning, like they should just fold up tents and tank for a guy who's thrown 93 passes, you should be embarrassed by what happened on Saturday. Like that is not a guy that any NFL team should be inviting losing into their stadium and their offices to go draft. Maybe he will be someday, but y'all were saying teams should start doing it this week for Arch Manning.
The funniest tanking for a quarterback dynamic that ever existed was when people were upset in the middle of the season that the Dolphins were playing too well to tank for Tua. And then they ended up not getting the number one overall pick, but then Tua not being considered the best prospect in the draft or a good enough quarterback to be drafted number one overall. So they got him anyway.
They got him anyways.
Yeah. Like, that's like the very hazards of tanking. People are upset that they weren't tanking for Tua, and then they still end up getting Tua.
Dude,
it's just nobody wants to acknowledge how random this whole damn business is.
Dude, that's a great point. It's so funny because the Dolphins that year, the tank for Tua year, I got to find it. If I'm not mistaken,
2020.
He was drafted in 20, so it was a 2019 season. That was when they traded Tunsil before the year.
That was when Fitzpatrick was playing.
Fitzpatrick
really
was the quarterback,
well,
and in weeks, I think it was week 17 back then, because they only played 16 games, they were like a 3-touchdown underdog to the New England Patriots in the last game of the year, and they beat the New England Patriots. That was the last regular season game that Brady ever played for the New England Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
Patriots would go on to get beat by the Titans in the playoffs that year, and Brady would leave to go to Tampa Bay.
Now, the ironic thing about it, though, is that if they had effectively tanked, it wouldn't have been for Tua. They probably would have drafted Joe Burrow.
Yeah.
So tanking for a specific player is dumb at the onset until you watch an entire season play out.
Yeah. I'm looking at the box score right now. I got to see what the spread was on that game. Spread was New England 17.5. So the Patriots are favored by 17.5, and the Dolphins ended up beating them. They go 5-11.
Let's redraft 2020 real quick.
Yeah.
Of these quarterbacks, Joe Burrow.
Yep.
Tua, in this order, this is how they went. Tua, Justin Herbert,
yep,
and then all the way down, Jordan Love at 26.
I would say Burrow number one, obviously.
Yeah.
That remains. Now, I'm not a huge Justin Herbert guy.
Yeah.
But
I still would like Herbert because I think he's going to be playing football 10 years from now.
Yeah, well, and Jordan Love had that one really good half a season a couple of years ago that got him paid, that got them beating the Cowboys by a mile in the playoffs that year. But other than that, Jordan Love's not been a great quarterback. I would say I'd go Burrow, Herbert, Love, Tua.
That's yeah, I would say Tua's fourth there too. Those other three, I feel like, okay, they can beat you downfield.
Yeah.
And that Jordan Love, maybe just we'll see what his ceiling is or whatever, but they can attack you downfield without being schemed up or having Tyreek Hill just beating people off the breaks or having to have a, they can run an actual offense no matter who the receivers are.
Yeah.
Whereas with Tua, it's got to be, everything's got to be just right. He's very much a Goldilocks quarterback.
They've all gotten paid. They've all gotten paid. They've all gotten big contracts, those four guys.
And I know people are going to just send me highlights of Tua throwing deep and everything. Like, no. I mean, actually earning that yardage downfield.
Dude, okay. Because when you mentioned Tua at five, I'm like, okay, well, they probably should have taken Justin Herbert. But should they have taken either of them? Who should they have taken if you're taking a position player? Yikes. Listen to the players take. Now, Derek Brown, pretty good for Carolina. He's a pretty good player. Not great, but pretty good. Isaiah Simmons, eighth. Who's on like his third team now? C.J. Henderson, Texans legend, ninth.
Yeah.
Jedrick Wills Jr. is, I don't think he's panned out in Cleveland, right? I'm not sure. He's an offensive line. Mekhi Becton.
Interesting journey, but he's not with the team that drafted him. Yeah.
Henry Ruggs.
Oh my gosh.
In jail.
What a horrible. You got to get down to Tristan Wirfs before
is a
somebody
good player.
You feel really good about.
Yep.
Well, that's what. And did you go over the guys above them?
Yeah.
I mean, it was Chase Young, Jeff Okuda. Andrew Thomas before you get to Tua.
Yeah.
What a horrible draft. What the hell was wrong with you, 2020?
A pretty
this
solid.
This was before, well, this was in the middle of COVID.
Yeah. This was the COVID
draft.
But
it wasn't based on the college performance of the COVID year, though.
Correct. Oh. Yeah, it was a 2019 season. Jerry Jeudy, his 15th. A.J. Terrell. Now, CeeDee Lamb, good football player. There you go. Damon Arnett, 19th in this draft. Holy crap.
What a mess.
And then there's Justin Jefferson at 22. Dude, all of those teams picking, honestly, all of those teams picking once Justin Herbert got picked, 7 through 21, all could have had Justin Jefferson on their team.
Okay, this is where it gets interesting because you know how at one point the Texans had three former top quarterback recruits out of high school on the Texans team.
Yep.
They had three guys. None of them were good pros, but they had three guys on the team where I felt like, man, maybe Nick just wants to see if he can capture the upside of these guys that had
five physical stars, talent
and potential and everything. That draft, the Texans have had all three of the cornerbacks in that first round, or three of the cornerbacks in that first round, and a very disappointing year for cornerbacks. Jeff Okuda, C.J. Henderson. They haven't had A.J. Terrell yet.
Nope, not yet.
But then Damon Arnett was the fourth cornerback taken. So they've had three of the top four cornerbacks from the 2020 draft on their team.
Better to have them after they get let go by the team that drafted them in the first round than to be the team that actually drafted them in the first round. Wow.
Yeah.
That's wild. That is wild. That was a fun trip down memory lane. All right, Seth alluded to it. Disrespect for Houston Texan players from front office types around the NFL, and we will not stand for this, nor sit for it. We will yell about it coming up next.